If you're looking for training, consider Packet Pusher sponsor, INE.com. INE is a training resource for networking and a whole lot more. Visit INE.com/packetpushers to get a free 3-day trial. INE, experts at making you an expert.
This episode is sponsored in part by ThousandEyes. ThousandEyes gives you visibility, insights, and actionable intelligence into user experience from every user to every application over any network. So you transform your WAN, troubleshoot faster, and deliver exceptional user experiences in the cloud and on premises. Try ThousandEyes for free at thousandeyes.com/packetpushers and snag a fun t-shirt. ThousandEyes. Thrive in a connected world.
The basic idea behind SD-WAN is that a software-controlled network can do a better job than a routed network. Okay, contentious? Maybe bend. All the evidence shows this to be true. Customers are talking about cost reductions, improved speeds, better monitoring, asset management. I mean, all these things just make it sound too good to be true, right? Sounds too good to be true? In today's show, I've gathered a group of people to talk about SD-WAN strategy and business issues. Let's say you've gotten the bug to get you some SD-WAN, but you know that your IT management isn't really interested because, you know, networking is hard and they don't know anything about it and why should they care anyway? And, you know, the WAN's working okay, it's costing a bomb, but so what? It's not my money, who cares, right? So I thought we'd get some people around the round table, the virtual round table, if you will, and debate some of the issues that you might use to make the business case and get some of that lovely, juicy budget allocated to the WAN for what will probably feel like the first time this decade. Let's get some brief introductions around the table before we launch the SD-WAN firecracker that is this show. First of all, let's start with Greg Bryan. Please tell people a little about yourself.
Hey, Greg. Thanks. This is Greg Bryan from Telegeography. So my title there is Senior Manager of Enterprise Research. I've been there for over a decade. If you don't know Telegeography, we are a market research firm that's totally focused on telecoms.
And also with us today is Jason. Jason, tell people a little about yourself.
Hey, I'm Jason Ginnert from WAN Dynamics. We're a managed and professional networking services firm focused primarily on SD-WAN and cloud connectivity.
And also with us today is Steve. Steve, tell us a little about yourself too.
I'm with SD-WAN Experts, and as the name defines, we help enterprises with WAN transformation, which today means SD-WAN. We also publish on a number of different web blogs.
Fantastic. So as you can see, the table is here. Drew Connery Murray is with me. And what we're focusing here is much more on the strategy and the business issues. Instead of picking things apart with a pair of pliers and seeing what's under the hood, we're really focusing on the business issues so you can go and make the case, just because half of a technology problem is the business problem. Let's kick off the first discussion with, just because vendors are marketing something a lot doesn't make it real, right? So companies really are willing to throw money at bad ideas just to see if it's not a bad idea. You may laugh, but there's plenty of products that vendors do, and then after a couple of years and several hundred million dollars, they go, oh, nobody wants that. Look at OpenStack, for example. So let's go around the table here and start talking a little bit about, are people deploying it? And if people are not deploying SD-WAN, what are the common reasons? So Greg, you've been in the research space around this. What do you think?
Now, I have some pretty specific answers to that. We just finished our 2018 WAN Manager Survey. And 83% of the folks that we queried in that, people, you know, responsible for managing WANs day to day for mostly like Fortune 1000 kind of companies, are at least considering. About a third are in the sort of researching vendor stage, a quarter in the kind of piloting stage, and about 20% have already rolled out. So yeah, people are adopting it. And, and if they're not, they're seriously considering it.
So they're a fair way down the pipeline, according to your survey data. Is that because your surveys are to people who are deep into this? Is there something in your survey that might, like, if you're an SD-WAN analyst, so maybe your survey is skewed into people who are doing it? Is that, would that be?
That is a great, great point, and it's true, and it's a caveat I like to have. So most of the folks who respond to my survey attended one of our WAN Summit events. Mm-hmm. If you bothered to go to London, New York, whatever, and attend an event, it's probably because you're thinking about this and you're interested in this. So
okay.
I don't have visibility into maybe often the kind of more SMEs or the technology behind kind of folks who haven't even considered this. Though I should say some of the folks that come to the event, some that I've talked to, are still a small percentage of them, but are still saying, I'm interested in other things, but not SD-WAN.
We've got a couple of data points from our own Packet-Pushers 2018 SD-WAN survey.
Oh, right. Yeah.
14% actually are using SD-WAN in production today. 37% are considering SD-WAN technology, and 24% are piloting. And that's based on 272 respondents from our own Packet-Pushers audience.
And that's so great to see how closely it aligned.
Pretty good. Yeah. Well, pretty good.
I would imagine the Packet-Pushers audience is kind of, again, you know, fairly up there and forward-looking. I always have to remind myself that a lot of people are actually not forward-looking and not taking on disruption. And I also want to put a big shout-out to the 4% of people who responded to the survey, which is 12 people, give or take, who said SDN is bollocks. So here's looking at you.
I had a couple of those for sure.
Yeah, that's right. Steve Garson, what do you think? Is that about right to you? Does that sound good?
I think it sounds good. And again, you know, Our perspective is skewed as well because we're contacted by companies that are interested in SD-WAN.
Yeah.
So we're not in the business of dialing companies and trying to solicit business. But we've worked with companies that are in the Fortune 500. We've worked with small companies with, you know, 5 or 6 locations. Mm. And they've all ended up implementing, and they've all ended up being very happy. And with the larger companies, the savings have been enormous, not just in reduction of MPLS circuits, and I qualify that and say in reduction of MPLS circuits with global companies, but in the time it takes to manage their network and deal with outages.
Okay. And Jason, you've been deploying these solutions for customers as well. You're feeling you get a lot of, you know, pushback when you get in front of people doing this?
Well, I think we've seen an evolution, at least from our perspective, where it really started in the SME space, where smaller organizations were really willing to take a chance on SD-WAN. It seemed to solve their problems, and they could deploy it quickly in their environment. And I think we saw a lot of the, you know, mid-market and larger enterprise take a step back and watch those deployments to see how successful they were before they jumped in. And we're seeing more of that now, that the larger companies starting to realize this is mainstream. This is, you know, this is probably the way they're going to be building their WANs moving forward, and starting to jump in. So from our perspective, we've seen the relative size of the customer increase, and much larger organizations taking a really close look at it now.
Sort of putting truth to the lie that enterprises are slow to change and slow to adopt new things, no matter how good they are or bad, for that matter. I think,
you know, obviously the vertical matters a lot too. So with our events in New York, London, Frankfurt, we get a lot of financials. The financials, I think, more so than a lot of other industries, have to sit back. They have to tell their CIO that everybody else has done it first and those kinds of things. So, you know, certainly within certain industries, there's a lot more reticence still.
I agree. Certain industries will be slow to change, but I think enterprise IT, it's hard to disagree that enterprise IT is generally slow to change. Once they've got a bad idea, there's no getting them to let it go.
I also think that another driver is MPLS contracts. People have read a lot about MPLS, you know, reducing MPLS costs, and they see their 3-year contracts coming to a close in the coming year, and they decide, let's look at SD-WAN.
That probably brings us to the next point, which is, and I've seen this a lot at conferences where telcos make a pitch that SD-WAN only works on guaranteed, you know, trusted MPLS tail circuits. Yeah, sure, it's directly internet connected, but, you know, you definitely need MPLS to have quality. And yet I'm also seeing people who are using consumer broadband and saying it works perfectly. Well, let's go around the table and see, you know, what's your experiences, consumer or MPLS or a mix?
Depending on the latency path, consumer broadband has worked remarkably well. I had lunch with somebody at one of the WAN summits who happened to be the VP of infrastructure for a large, very large company. And he had told me how they had rolled out SD-WAN a year earlier, and they had one MPLS circuit and a DIA circuit. And I asked him, I said, so do you ever just shut off your MPLS circuit at a location and look at the stats and see how performance is? And he goes, yeah, I wish I didn't renew my MPLS contract. Now, I wouldn't go that route with locations in China and India and some other difficult locations, but a lot of companies are being successful using just the internet.
And consumer-grade broadband.
And consumer-grade broadband. And then there's a new category of transport called SD Core, which essentially gives you an MPLS network in the cloud that you can access with an IPsec VPN, which really gives you the best of both worlds at a much lower price.
What's your experience, Jason?
Steve said something important there. It's regarding the latency. So the latency profile of the applications, it plays a big part in what kind of access you can use. So if it's something like VDI, if an organization uses VDI really heavily, using commodity broadband, you know, the latency profile there could be too great for that to work appropriately. So we've seen a few deployments where customers have gotten off of MPLS and, you know, their users noticed that there was a performance impact going to broadband. So when it comes to that sort of thing, I would recommend considering a dedicated internet access or MPLS to keep the latency low.
Would you in that situation say to them, try consumer internet first, and if that doesn't work, put MPLS in second? Because there's so much money to be made by avoiding, you know, dedicated WAN circuits that it would have to be something that you'd want to address on a case-by-case basis, I think.
I would. I mean, for the customer that we had that experienced it, they used Citrix VDI heavily. They went to all broadband at all the locations. They ended up having to put in a dedicated internet access circuit. They didn't have to put MPLS back, but they did need a little bit lower latency in the dedicated internet access, at least in the US. Those networks are designed to have lower latency than a broadband network.
But also consumer broadband typically is asymmetrical. So you may get very high download speeds, but your upload speeds are often pretty low. So it's not one size fits all. You really have to look at, you know, how much bandwidth do you need up and down, especially with the movement to Office 365 and OneDrive. You've got to have some decent upload speed on your connection.
I know, Greg, at Telegeography, you've done a lot of research into different locations. I think part of this is going to be some telcos are good in some areas and bad at, like, consumer internet in some countries is going to vary widely to others.
Yeah. And, you know, when I talk to WAN managers, one of the main things they say is, you know, about using consumer grade broadband is, if I can even get it, right? You know what I mean? You can always get the carrier to pull a T1 or whatever, which is where a lot of folks in the US are stuck. And even in the US, so you know, obviously the situation's difficult when you have offices in Africa or the Middle East and stuff like that. But even in the US, you don't have an unbundling regime or anything like that. You might be stuck with, you know, an ILEC kind of DSL service and no chance for there to be a fully redundant dual kind of link. I mean, we did have a case study in New York that's really familiar probably to a lot of your listeners, because Snehal Patel from The Gap has done it in a bunch of venues where they solve that by kind of using LTE at a lot of their stores that are in malls that only have, you know, a contract with a single provider and stuff like that. But ultimately, in our surveys and the folks I talk to, you know, just the availability of broadband isn't great, especially when you're getting into less developed markets, but even in some cases in the U.S.
And also, if you're in the manufacturing business, most manufacturers are located in remote locations because that's where real estate is cheap. And it's very rare to be able to find broadband there. I'm working with a company now, and only 15% of their locations even have, you know, broadband available.
Yeah, I would definitely second that. Yep.
And what about having multiple providers? So one of the answers has been, so for example, in Europe, the argument's very different. It's often possible to get a broadband tail from three or four different companies. And sometimes your last mile might be on the same infrastructure, but the backbones would be different. And at any given point in time, you can actually get good loadout if you can get three or four different providers. Now, America's telco environment's pretty bad for consumers, but, you know, there is advantage there if you can get three or four or five circuits too, isn't there?
Typically not. Usually it's what we recommend is a dedicated internet access if you can afford it. So some sort of either fiber-based, Ethernet over copper, something with an SLA and low latency. And then as far as broadband goes, maybe secondary broadband, and the tertiary connection is usually a 4G. There's actually a new, some of the carriers are releasing these new all-you-can-eat 4G plans. I heard of AT&T in the US just released one of these where you can select a LTE circuit at 8, 12, or 50 megabits per second, all you can eat, a flat rate. And I think that's going to change things pretty dramatically moving forward as far as how these are designed in the circuit selection process.
Yeah, Jason, I agree with that, definitely. I think it certainly in the future more and more the case that there's going to be selling fixed wireless LTE, eventually 5G, as kind of a local access product that's priced and thought of in the same way that, that local access is currently. And the other thing I'd add on to what you said there, Jason, is in terms of having DIA rather than broadband, geography makes a huge difference. It's in our name, right? But if you're in the US, parts of Europe, depending on who your carriers are, DIA price points, MPLS have converged, right? So MPLS, especially for your best efforts portion of that, it is starting to converge with DIA pricing. MPLS is falling faster. In other words, elsewhere, that's very much not the case. So particularly in say, Asian locations, things like that, you're going to have a much cheaper price for DIA. So that's kind of the, you know, when we get benchmark clients, that's the thing that we're going over with them is you know, the heuristic that you're going to be using to think about how to change your network varies a lot based on your location and obviously the needs of that office.
My favorite one was at a conference. I watched a guy talk about, he was using satellite and an ISDN circuit. And his ISDN would be preferable, but at least the satellite worked. You know, like he was just happy to have something that would work reliably and automatically fail over. And so it can go all the way from that, like, you know, just glad that it works at all, to how fast can it be? So I think you do need to take into account the full spectrum here. And also probably the lesson to take away here is that you can use consumer internet and it'll probably work. Maybe you want to match your bandwidth selection according to what the branch does. If you have a small branch that's got low criticality, maybe get some consumer internet. But if you've got more headcount and more applications at a certain branch, maybe you want to go that way. Let's talk a little bit about customers. You guys have all worked with customers who've done this at one way or another. Have you got some stories about customers and how successful or unsuccessful they've been at operating SD-WAN? So the sorts of things I want to hear about here is, was it difficult to transition the organization? Were they using managed services or did they self-operate? And is there a better way to go?
Well, when I look at large enterprises seem to be interested in a managed solution for the most part. That isn't, you know, not 100%. Some want to manage it themselves. But the ones that have gone with a managed solution and a non-carrier managed solution, I should specify, have been very happy with the implementation. And very happy with the responsiveness and management. The ones who have rolled out and managed it themselves, it takes a little longer. You know, the key is the upfront planning, understanding all the use cases, and probably the single cause of delays in implementation is not understanding how long it can take to get circuits provisioned.
Most of us have experienced just how bad that. Jason, you're doing a lot of rollouts, same thing or different stories?
A same deal. And, you know, to speak to Steve's point, we're finding a lot of success in a co-managed approach where, you know, and for us, we're Switzerland when it comes to the circuit. So we'll let the customer, you know, select those and find the right fit for them. But our role is to help them get their arms around SD-WAN, understand what an overlay is, what an underlay is, how to stitch those things together, where your redistribution points between the two are.
Do people really struggle with that? That sounds like core competency for an infrastructure professional. Do people really struggle with those simple things?
They do. I mean, the toughest thing is figuring out, so everybody's expecting some sort of like dynamic routing. Okay, I need to, you know, OSPF or BGP. That happens at the edge, but on the SD-WAN network as a whole, it becomes its own, what is essentially its own routing protocol. So that's kind of a mind bender for some people. They're like, well, wait, where's my OSPF and BGP sessions for these links? They don't exist. You know, they're in an SD-WAN overlay now. You're going to have to get used to that. And then redistributing that into a routing protocol you understand at the edge. So that's sometimes tough for folks who are new to the concept to understand that.
So Greg, what about your experiences? Are they roughly the same?
Yeah, you know, a little bit different, I think, because, you know, as a research shop, we're talking to a broad group of people. Folks that are coming to Jason and Steve are going to a consultancy to make that transition. Mm-hmm. They're coming to us just for benchmarks, or I'm talking to them as a part of a survey at the WAN Summit, that kind of thing. So the plurality of folks that we're talking to are going with the DIY approach, you know, going vendor direct for SD-WAN kind of stuff. It's a pretty small group that are going to manage service providers, and a slightly bigger, but still relatively small group, about a third who are going with a carrier as a managed service. Mm. And the comments I get around, you know, why do it DIY. Obviously, like we said at the beginning, the folks I'm talking to are the proactive ones who are interested in this sort of thing. But their comments are along the lines of, you know, why do I want to give up control? The point here is to lower my overhead, to have a tighter IT team and that sort of thing. And, you know, particularly, like I said, when you're in those financial kind of verticals, where the IT team may be really stressed about it, the WAN managers that I talk to really want that visibility themselves. They want to be able to control things themselves.
I'm very concerned that a lot of telcos are actually getting into managed service providers of managed service of SD-WAN, and they've got big dreams, but...
Well, they have to, right? If you're a telco right now and you spent all this money on MPLS over the last 10 years, then you're looking at this and that's what the smart play is. You know, so I think they're doing it for that reason. I think I've talked to a lot of carriers. I talk as much to the carrier side, really, as the end user side. And the carriers say, I don't really even care if I sell you the underlay, if I can sell you a managed service, right? You know?
Let's pause the podcast for a moment to tell you about today's sponsor, ThousandEyes. Like it or not, your organization is embracing the cloud, and that might be great for the business, but for network architects and IT ops teams, it can be a service delivery nightmare. Why? Well, you're depending on cloud providers, ISPs, and third-party apps for business-critical services. And even though you don't control those networks, you do own the service delivery, which means if performance is bad, people are going to come looking for you. And this is where ThousandEyes can help. You can take advantage of ThousandEyes agents across the cloud within your enterprise all the way down to the endpoint. These agents actively monitor network behavior and topologies and how they affect application performance. With ThousandEyes, you can correlate multiple layers of performance data from L2 to L7, including BGP routing and DNS, to quickly identify problem areas and dramatically reduce your mean time to repair. You can pinpoint the root cause of device faults, congestion, Wi-Fi quality, DDoS attacks, and more. And you don't have to keep all this intelligence to yourself. You can easily share events, metrics, and dashboards with your vendors and customers so that you can collaborate to resolve problems faster. ThousandEyes also aggregates anonymized real-time data from a collective dataset so they can generate insights about large-scale issues across the internet, including their severity and breadth, as well as likely root cause. Now, if all that sounds good to you, here's a special offer for Packet Pushers listeners. Try ThousandEyes for free at thousandeyes.com/packetpushers. And while you're there, get yourself a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. That's thousandeyes.com/packetpushers. Manage every network like it's your own. ThousandEyes. Thrive in a connected world. And now, back to the podcast.
I'm just not convinced that a telco can actually do SD-WAN. I can believe that a telco can configure a router, because a router is type of is like a one and done. You configure the routing and we're done. Until it breaks, in which case a process kicks off to unbreak it. And that makes sense. That's a telco thing. But an SD-WAN, for me, is a lot about, you know, this application recognition and tuning it every week to get something better, or adapting to changing conditions in the backbone. That just doesn't sound to me like something that a telco can do well. And that feels like it's just going to end in tears.
But also, how many people are thrilled with their carrier from a service perspective?
Not many. And from my perspective, I came from a telecommunications provider. That was what I did before we started providing managed WAN services. And, you know, there's some cultural issues inside of a telco where, you know, they want to maintain that control. They either have to manage it or you have to manage it, but there's no room for any sort of middle ground. And I think that the most successful deployment options and management options are co-managed, where, the provider can help up to a certain point and then let the customer drive when they want to. And that's one of the great things about SD-WAN, right? You have this SD-WAN controller that obfuscates out certain things and, you know, prevents a customer from being able to break things too badly. And if you need to roll it back, you know, the rollback process is pretty easy. So we find, as a managed service provider, customers love that co-managed approach where we say, drive it to the point where you're comfortable. And then when you get in over your head or you have questions about something, call or knock, you know, refer to our guys, our guys' expertise to help out.
Well, see, the thing I like about that from a business perspective is, if I fall out of love with you as a service provider, I can just take my equipment to somebody else, right? And bring them in to help. Whereas if I'm using a telco managed service, if I walk away from them, I have to redeploy my entire network and I have to redeploy my entire professional services. So I'm probably going to have to go and hire people to repopulate their WAN team. And then I'm going to have to take over all those comm circuits. The telco is probably going to turn them all off. They're not going to hand them over to me. They're going to screw me as I leave. And so now all of a sudden I'm stuck with such a massive effort to disengage from a managed service or managed SD-WAN that it would be very poor business practice to let yourself be on the hook for that, I think.
Yeah, and there's another element that a lot of those SD-WAN solutions are customized to the service provider's offering, meaning they are not the native SD-WAN solution. So for example, you know, VeloCloud, you can use APIs to control that solution, the VCO, the VeloCloud Orchestrator. There's a lot of providers that have created their own interface that obfuscates out most of the functionality to the customer, and you have to use their interface.
And they may only let you use certain features too. So
correct.
If you're using, so if they're deploying an MS, a VeloCloud or a Silverpeak, and they've got all these lovely features for acceleration and application recognition, and if their portal doesn't support them, then you've got this magic solution that does nothing.
Exactly. Right. And I really believe having a third party consultant that is helping you in evaluating this process is really valuable because, you know, otherwise, you know, people are learning about this technology and they're learning from a sales force who's trying to sell you what they offer. And it may turn out to be a square peg in a round hole. And often people don't learn that until it might be too late.
So I'm curious to hear from you guys, because one of the things that we at the Packet Burst side constantly hear from the SD-WAN vendors is, you know, zero touch provisioning, really easy to set up, really easy to deploy, a simple controller to go in and set all your policies and then manage it. But it sounds like there may be some hidden complexities or issues that folks should be aware of. I'm curious what kind of snags customers you see running into.
Well, for one, zero touch provisioning doesn't always work. And if you have a field organization that has no technical expertise, the idea of shipping a box, plugging it in, working, you know, yes, it works often, but how do you deal with it when it doesn't work? And how do you learn in advance, you know, when it won't work so you don't fall into that trap?
And I can see that would be an issue for like a retail organization where they've got a bunch of stores that don't necessarily have technical support on site.
Exactly. And I think in those kind of situations, you know, they often will hire live hands to do that because you never know. And let's face it, you know, people in a retail store, their job is to run the store, not to run the network.
And Jason, you were talking about potential routing complexities.
Yeah, you know, hopefully you've ironed a lot of those out initially. There have been occasions where, you know, the customer comes up with an, oh yeah, that thing we forgot about, that one-off that's at that store that everyone seemed to forget about. But for the most part, you know, as long as you do your due diligence in the design process, which I can't emphasize enough, and Steve mentioned it earlier, it is so important. A lot of service provider services like MPLS are transactional. A lot of folks know what an MPLS service is, and they just, you buy it, you integrate it.
You wait patiently for 4 months for them to deploy it and screw around with fiber optic and blah, blah, blah. Sorry, did I say that out loud? I apologize. Your average telco's core business is so disastrous. No, totally, we can get that done in 30 days. 75 days later? Yeah, no, we're still on our 30-day SLA because it wasn't all our fault that all those things didn't get done. Lying to
rags. Absolutely. No, I totally agree with you. And I come from that world, so I know how much pain I put customers through. So I'm apologizing on behalf of the service provider community for to everyone.
They're doing the best they can.
But you were talking about being prepared for this deployment, and we had mentioned earlier about geographical issues, application issues in terms of latency dependencies. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about, this, you know, pre-planning phase?
Yeah, a lot of the physical plant and making, you know, getting the application profile to understand what kind of latency you're going to, you know, latency is acceptable on the links. But also some of the things I mentioned before, the overlay networking, the underlay networking, where the points where those need to redistribute into one another, and just how all of that stuff fits together. And a huge, huge, huge element is where's the security perimeter? Because one thing to bear in mind, a lot of these SD-WAN solutions do not. Some do, but the vast majority don't have an integrated security component. So you have to think about, where's that perimeter live? Is that in my data center? Do I need that on site for internal segmentation of VLANs? Or can I use a cloud service to integrate that? So you have to think about where those things are.
People aren't doing security in the WAN today anyway. Like, they send their data out over the WAN circuits unencrypted and then cross their fingers that the telcos are secure. And they're not. Like, you can't prove that a telco is actually safe and secure. And but they're happy to send their data unencrypted over a WAN link, MPLS, dedicated circuit, and go, well, that's secure. It's not. right? So what's the difference between that and what you're talking about? Just because you don't have a firewall in the branch doesn't make it more secure, because it's not secure now, right?
Agree, but actually I do have some customers that have a firewall at every single location, and they do it for internal segmentation gateway where they groom their VLANs and they're monitoring traffic east-west between VLANs. And you know, they have to make that solution work. But there's also things like web application firewall. Where does that live? And when users actually access the internet, how does that flow in an SD-WAN network now?
Well, you definitely need a firewall if you're going to do local internet breakout, which is not something we've talked about yet. But increasingly, as companies start to use Office 365 or apps hosted in AWS or you know, using managed services from Salesforce, there's no point in looping all that traffic down to the data center. If you've got an internet connection at every single branch now with SD-WAN, you do local traffic breakout, in which case you do need some sort of firewall connection. Now, that could be as simple as a filtering rule saying anything out, nothing in, and it could be much more sophisticated. Are you guys working in that area with local breakout? What are your thoughts there?
Most definitely. And I think security is something that people don't start off thinking about. You know, they get into the SD-WAN evaluation process thinking, well, I want to reduce my MPLS costs. And we always insist that security get involved, because this is a good opportunity to look at your whole security posture as part of the process. There are solutions where security can be integrated. And security, you know, could be, you know, like you said, as simple as a stateful firewall, or it could be as much as your CASB solutions and next generation firewall, IDS, IPS. You know, there's a full security stack that can be looked at as part of this whole SD-WAN evaluation process.
I talked to so many WAN managers who say, you know, the internal politics is one of the key difficulties of their job. It's not as much the engineering part, right? And making sure that the security team is there the first time you talk to a potential SD-WAN vendor or whatever, I think is really key.
There are some SD-WAN vendors who are producing NFV-type SD-WAN appliances. So you put an appliance out in the branch, and then they'll offer you a virtual machine or a container-type architecture, and in there will be a virtual firewall, a virtual IDS, a virtual proxy, a whole bunch of like tools that you can deploy. I actually sometimes look at that and think, like, that makes it really hard. Like, you're biting off a big part of the pie there. You're trying to eat the whole sausage in one bite. And, you know, you're going to change your SD-WAN. Now you're going to implement new security policies. You're going to put firewalls at the edge. You're going to implement a complete change to the way that your branch security posture is. So, Jason, in your experience, you know, when you're looking at the different vendors, some of whom have got NFV, is that something that they – is what I'm saying there correct? Is it just too much to do and can cause decision paralysis?
I think most NFV solutions are immature, to be honest with you, at least the ones that we've seen. And we've explored it for ourselves, deploying NFV. The orchestration and management pieces required to do that well, they're super complex. And I don't think most of the solutions that we've played with, at least, are there yet. So I think they're ways off. And I think it'll be a challenging thing to tackle, just managing all of those applications. I do see a day where, you know, integration of your SD-WAN function, your firewall function, and maybe even a couple of other things like hosting IoT data caches locally.
Guest networking was one that I've seen them talk about. So if you've got a wireless network there, you might want to put a guest networking module so that guests can connect to the Wi-Fi, because you don't want to have to deploy an enterprise-grade Wi-Fi to do that. You want to use consumer grade Wi-Fi and just put something in the SD-WAN appliance that could do that.
Yeah, absolutely. A distributed controller of some sort, even distributed file storage I've seen, you know, discussed, you know, like a little minimal cache. You know, these are the files that these folks use the most often. Why not cache them locally on a little appliance there?
Yeah, a little proxy server. What about people breaking out to security scanning services like Zscaler? So if you do local breakout, you can forward your traffic into like Cisco's umbrella or Zscaler, and then they'll scan it for viruses and log it and apply any filtering that you want. Is that something you've seen used a lot?
That's pretty common SD-WAN implementation for the security side of things. In fact, I think most of the SD-WAN companies that don't have any security part of their solution, Zscaler is the Kleenex of that capability.
it's the name that always comes up. We track this. We have like SD-WAN provider profiles, and that's the one that you can guarantee is listed on their sort of next gen firewall is Zscaler. But you know, obviously in other Fortinet, Palo Alto, those kind of, but Zscaler is the one that always comes up.
Yeah, very promiscuous. They'll partner with anybody.
Yeah. And I think that's the name I had in mind when we talked about security, you know, integration of Zscaler, or Palo Alto has Global Protect Cloud Service now too, that you know, competes with that. Deciding, okay, from my security posture standpoint, for my users accessing the internet, do I want to backhaul that back to my data center like I've always done with the MPLS, or can I just roll in this Zscaler GPCS to do that instead?
Yeah, if I was an SD-WAN provider, I wouldn't want to partner with Palo because they'd muscle in on my customer and kick me out.
Sure.
Like, they're a very aggressive sales organization, and they believe that all customers shall bow down to Palo. In, you know, which is fine. That's a sales organization. That's the business that they do, but they're not so great at partnering.
Let's not forget about some of the cloud-based solutions, because there are some SD-WANs that are based in the cloud and offer, you know, security in the cloud so that, you know, you don't need a security appliance on site.
Yeah, there's a wide range of solutions there.
This sponsored break in our conversation is courtesy of INE.com, experts at making you an expert. That is, INE offers training, lots of it. Over 13,000 videos are in their library covering technical topics interesting to engineers across the IT stack. Much of this material is hardcore routing, switching, networking kind of stuff, the deep dives, the nerd knobs. You can go from CCNA through CCIE all with INE. But INE is more than just training for Cisco networking, with videos for AWS, Microsoft, VMware, Wireshark, GNS3, Linux, Juniper, SDN, Python, Ansible, DevOps, and more. A monthly subscription gets you unlimited streaming access to the entire library of deeply technical material taught by highly credentialed instructors. Your account also includes curated topical playlists, bookmarking, and progress tracking so that you can keep up with where you're at and quickly go back to the material you need to go over again. Mobile apps are available on both iOS and Android so that you can cram knowledge into your head conveniently no matter where you're traveling, stylish digital nomad that you are. How do you start getting all of this information into your brain? Visit INE.com/packetpushers for your free 3-day trial. Pay nothing today. Sample the content. Find out if it's what you're looking for. And then run with a month-to-month subscription once you see the value. One more time, that's INE.com/packetpushers. And now back to the show.
Question I want to ask you is, how many of you are using a telecommunications broker? So if you've got 100 sites and you deploy 2 or 3, you know, broadband circuits or MPLS circuits at each site, well, now you've got an administration problem. I've been saying to people, why don't you go and consider a telecommunications broker? And they're companies who just handle the billing of that. So instead of giving it away to a managed service provider, just get a broker to do that. Is that something that you see often?
Unquestionably. In fact, it's the only way to go. And I've worked with companies that, you know, tell me, oh, and I'm not going to name carriers, but, you know, we get our DIA circuits all over the world. And when you uncover the onion and you're in this business, you discover that they're actually using a telecom broker for DIA circuits where they don't have a footprint, and they're marking it up 20%, 25% to 40%. So I think it's a very smart way to go.
Jason?
Yeah, you know, when you look from a practical standpoint, let's say you want to add local internet to all of your offices, and you have, you know, 500 plus offices around the world. You really want someone in every country who can speak the native language of that ISP and manage that for you and that sort of thing. I think there becomes a real need for someone to be able to penetrate that market without you having the expertise at hundreds and hundreds of sites. You know?
If you've got an office in that location, I'm less convinced by that argument. If you've got an office in that location, you've probably got somebody who can speak the language. It's not ideal, but it's not impossible. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. We talk to people who go that way, and the reason they do is because you save money, right? But
yeah, I would say from our perspective, I mean, it's actually a part of our business model where we strategically don't sell the circuits because we enable those telecom brokers to go figure out the connectivity. Then they bring us in to put an SD-WAN over the top. I don't want to sell the circuits. I want them to sell the circuits, and I want them to bring me in to help run the SD-WAN, a truly carrier independent SD-WAN, which, you know, it's kind of going back to the whole carrier conversation. It's kind of like having the fox in the hen house. The guy who's responsible for the connectivity is not going to want you to optimize that SD-WAN to its fullest potential, in my opinion.
Yeah, they make more money out of bandwidth than they do minimizing the bandwidth, selling you more bandwidth. How difficult is it then to engage it? So a telecom broker is very useful in managing many telcos, or that's the job. So you, instead of dealing with one telco and then paying that service provider or, you know, your local Verizon, AT&T, BT, and then BT goes off in the back end and subcontracts to other people, the telecom broker is your first step, and they have BT, Verizon, and AT&T on call. Is that the way it works?
Sometimes. Give you an example. You have a global company, and most of the locations are the U.S., maybe 25% are overseas. You might use a telecom broker for all of your broadband and your international circuits. You might use a carrier direct for DIA circuits in locations where it's they have the infrastructure. You just have to weigh the pros and cons of the cost uptick. You know, are you willing to pay multiple bills? Are you willing to manage those circuits? Or do you want a third party to do all that for you?
So there's a spectrum. You could have a telecom broker do all of it. And on the other side, you could do it all yourself. And on the other side, there's a service provider doing it, or a telco doing it all for you, a service provider. And somewhere in the middle, there's pieces where you break it all up. So you, as you said.
Yeah, exactly. It's a matter, you know, because there is a cost. The third party has to make money. Mm. There is a cost in outsourcing all that. And you have to make a business decision where you whether you have the resources to do some of that yourself or you just want to farm it all out.
It's still, Greg, I'll say this, you know, if you had asked me 3 or 4 years ago, almost all of our benchmarking customers, you know, pretty large enterprises, mm-hmm. mid-market, smallest, were coming in with one or two global suppliers, and they just wanted to make sure that, you know, prices were falling as quickly as they thought they should be. Now, almost everybody who comes to us is saying, you know, my goal here is to get out from under a single supplier and piece together a bunch of suppliers, whether they do that through a broker, whether they're willing to do that themselves, that much more tends to be what most of our customers are looking to do than it was just a few years ago.
When you're looking at DIA circuits, there's a value in being on the same backbone globally, if that's possible, because you're going to reduce congestion at the interexchange points between different backbones.
Yeah, I'm more of a fan of getting a monitoring tool to watch that. So you can get things like ThousandEyes and Kentek to monitor the performance of those things.
Yeah, I'll say we asked that question in our WAN manager survey, and that was the lowest factor in who they chose for their internet service. I mean, the biggest factor is what service is actually available. I'll do anything to not have asymmetrical service, you know?
I do feel that, yes, you're right, Steve. I think there is an issue with, you know, the internet backbone can get snarled up and you can have poor performance. But I think it's much more effective these days to have a tool that lets you detect that and then abuse the telco and make them make good than it is the other way around. Because you need to know that there's a problem rather than just blindly pay money for something that may or may not be needed.
True, but there often is not much you could do with the telco for a DIA circuit. It's a different story with an MPLS circuit, of course.
Yeah, well, in which case you know why you need to shut down that circuit and switch to another provider as well.
Right.
Some of that's built into the SD-WAN tools themselves. So, you know, a lot of them will have a quality score on a circuit. So you can kind of manage that on a one-to-one basis. If you've got underperforming network in a region, you should be able to see that with some of the scoring tools and identify those circuits and get them replaced. Go to that back to that telecommunications broker or the provider and say, hey, this circuit's frequently not performing well enough. I need something new.
Let me ask you about SD-WAN and the number of vendors. I think last time I checked, there's like 60 different SD-WAN vendors in the market today. And it's pretty easy to find a good 20 to 30 of them without looking too hard. And the general wisdom of technology markets is that there can only be one winner. So, for example, Cisco has always had a dominant market share of 60 to 80%. And Microsoft dominated the desktop market. And Intel dominates the CPUs. But the SD-WAN market does not seem to be shrinking much. Is there a chance that SD-WAN, because it sits over the top, it doesn't care about the core, it doesn't need to integrate with the core networks, it doesn't need interoperability with anything, and we'll talk about interoperability in the next topic, is it possible that SD-WAN could end up as a multi-sided market? So that is, there's 10, 20, 30 players, or will there be a rational?
I think the answer is both and. I mean, we've been saying for a long time we expected to see kind of more consolidation, and I guess that's been slower to materialize than I would have guessed a couple of years ago. But the other key thing, I think the way that I would answer that question is to say that, what do you mean by SD-WAN? Because if you say there's, you know, 50 SD-WAN providers, then, you know, we'll have MEF coming up with a sort of you know, most basic features that get to be called SD-WAN. But even once folks start to get certified by MEF and you have a clear definition of exactly what is an SD-WAN provider, quote unquote, there's still really different kind of ways that they're going to market. Some of them are pure play, only designed for channel partners, right? We profile quite a few that they don't sell to the enterprise directly at all. Others you would never want to use if you were a global enterprise. You know what I mean? Some of the more startup ones might fall under that, where just like the geographic reach isn't going to be right, even just for shipping equipment.
They're small business or limited scale.
Yeah. I think it'll stay fairly populated because there's a lot of different niches to fill here, which kind of different than you know, say MPLS or something like that. Yeah. Where
MPLS, which is one size fits all.
Exactly.
And it's not like the vendors want to give you a chance. They want to jam it down everybody's
throat. Right.
Yeah. Steve, what do you think? Do you think it's going to be a multi-sided market?
I think it's going to be a multi-sided market, but in keeping what we just heard, you know, there's a lot of companies that are just, you know, you're a firewall company, and now all of a sudden I can manage my firewall from the web. You know, I'm an SD-WAN company. Oh, failover between circuits, BGP, 45 seconds, 60 seconds, you'll be out. Forget about that voice call that you were on or the importance.
Yeah, I know the firewall vendor you're talking about. It's laughable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've rebranded their firewalls as an SD-WAN appliance because they do IPsec VPNs. Goodness me.
Yeah, really, you know, I don't see, I could name a half dozen companies that I would say are ones that I would seriously consider in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the Gartner report, there are some SD-WAN companies that have niches in the retail world and things of that nature. And those are good niches to be in.
Yeah.
But you know, to say that there's 50 SD-WAN providers, I think is a pipe dream.
So how would you advise customers then? I'm curious to get all three of your inputs on this. When there's so many potential vendors you could go to even build a short list, what kind of features or capabilities should folks be looking for as sort of this is the bottom line of what we need and what we're calling SD-WAN?
Well, that's a long discussion.
The answer, like everything else, is always, it depends, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's why we've got analysts on this show. You can go and talk to them and pay them a nominal fee to be advised on this, Drew.
and financial stability is another issue. Yeah. You know, are they growing? Do they have a, you know, how many people sign an NDA and want to look at the finances of the vendor they're looking at? You know, it's important.
Yeah, you don't want your provider to not exist a year from now.
You know, the flip side here is that because these solutions are very software centric and they work on basically what is a white box hardware, an x86, their cost base is very different from what we saw even 5 years ago. So instead of, you know, the old Cisco model of building a custom box like the ISR that's got specialist chips all over it and custom metal work and special green paint. And it took them 7 years to build the ISR, to go through the design cycle for the ISR and all that sort of stuff. But these SD-WAN companies are just buying generic white boxes off the shelf from some, you know, one of the Chinese OEMs or using Dell's standard boxes in this space. They don't have the costs that we used to have. So if they're taking in 100 or 200 million a year, they're quite often profitable, like substantially profitable, because they don't have assets in a warehouse. They don't have to have a global distribution network, you know, that sort of stuff. I think there's a difference in this market.
Well, yeah, there's definitely a difference, but still you have to do your due diligence and know who you're dealing with.
Yeah. Geography still matters, right? So, I mean, it does matter that, you know, for example, and as on the engineers, you guys can speak more to this, but I mean, if you have sites all over the world, you want to make sure that if you have a cloud controller, that it's sitting somewhere near your sites, relatively speaking, right?
Jason?
Yeah, I think some of the key considerations are, is it really SD-WAN, first of all? and it's really kind of like, it's like cloud. It's like everything's an SD-WAN. To your point, you know, there's certain security vendors and other folks out there that they take features of their product that they've already developed and they rename them. Oh, this is the SD-WAN module now. And it's not necessarily the same thing. So
how do you tease that out then? What in your mind is SD-WAN as opposed to I've got two IPsec tunnels and I'll just fail over between them, you know, using BGP or some other mechanism?
I think some of the table stake features for a quality SD-WAN product is, one, path measurement, constant path measurement, making sure that each path, you know, is, you know, from a latency, jitter, and packet loss perspective, what that looks like. And then being able to do something about that, you know, within sub-seconds, you know, mm-hmm. being able to steer the traffic to an alternate path or turn on forward error correction, which is, you know, duplicating packets like a real-time RTP in an audio session, being able to duplicate that traffic or de-jitter, if there's jitter issues across the link, being able to de-jitter that traffic. So I think those are the key features. And I would recommend to everybody do a POC with a few vendors, do a proof of concept, compare these things back to back, and really identify, you know, which one you think, first of all, operates the best. So really have a good testing plan to, you know, to vet out your expectations of the products, and also try to integrate one, try to deploy one as you would in a real office, mm-hmm. and maybe even take a guinea pig and, you know, somebody who, the guy who always complains and says, we're always slow. We, you know, service always sucks at this location. Take that one site and say, okay, cool. You guys are going to be the guinea pig where we're going to try, you know, this new SD-WAN thing.
So instead of a MOS score, you've got like a Bob score.
A Bob score.
Let's not forget about analytic tools, because the quality of analytic tools varies dramatically between vendors. You know, are you able to really troubleshoot what's going on? Is it an application issue?
Yeah, not troubleshoot the devices, troubleshoot the application performance.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. There's a difference here, yeah.
And the last thing I would add would be, you know, you want as many network technologies as possible supported, right? Make sure that that you'll be able to really utilize the diversity that you could get with the underlay.
Mm-hmm. So what about interoperability? So if SD-WAN is going to be a multi-sided market, if you take that thesis and accept that, you know, there's going to be a very large number of vendors, Cisco's unlikely to dominate because its products are aligned with its other strategies that it's got going on. What about interoperability? Do we need to have SD-WANs interoperate? Now, just keep in mind here, SD-WAN is an edge technology. That is, the box goes on site, it connects to another box like the same. So if you want to replace it, all you have to do is put another box in. Right, so you can have half your SD-WAN running on vendor one and another half of your SD-WAN running on vendor two, and then terminate them in the head office. And you can have two of them running at once if you want. There's nothing stopping you from having a migration strategy because all the boxes are at the edge, right? Is that unreasonable? Do I need to have SD-WANs interoperating?
It's a nice thing, but I don't know if it's ever going to happen. There are large enterprises that have grown through acquisition, and they have maybe two or three different SD-WANs. Obviously, you don't have the benefit of a single pane of glass to manage your entire network. But Jason, do you see them being interoperable at some point in the future?
It comes down to standards. And I know the MEF is working on some of that, on standardizing some of the pieces around SD-WAN so that they're all talking a common language. You know, like the APIs that are used to talk to the controller, for example, they're looking at ways to make that standardized so that, you know, when the endpoint's talking back to the controller, that it's somewhat uniform. It's a well-known API. The toughest thing's going to be the overlay technologies vary so much from vendor to vendor to vendor. You know, they all kind of have their own special secret sauce and that comes down to those WAN remediation techniques we talked about, like the taking jitter buffering, the forward error correction. Those are usually inherent in whatever that overlay protocol is. So each of these vendors is going to have a different flavor. I think that's going to be really difficult to interoperate.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop us from, like, for example, in the data center where NSX uses STT for NSX to NSX, but when it talks to non-NSX devices, it uses VXLAN. There's no reason why the software can't be changed to just use the appropriate encapsulation.
That's true, but they're going to have standardized on what that encapsulation is. That's because a lot of them are proprietary today.
Yeah, so if you stand down to a dumb encapsulation, you lose a bunch of features. You lose your application monitoring or your path probing, because some people do path probing by sending packets in band. Some of them monitor the perform pacing of the TCP packets end to end. You know, there's all these different ways of doing it. Some of them use BFD over the pipe to test how if the performance, if there's jitter or loss. So there's all these different ways of doing it, but there's just going to have to be like a dumb default that they could interoperate on that, you know, the controllers have like, here's, if you want to configure a VPN from our SD-WAN to their SD-WAN, here's the dumb default. That was how I thought it would play out.
That's probably the way it'll play out, but, you know, so I guess if you call that interoperability, I guess that is interoperability, but you'll obviously have a much reduced feature set.
I just don't think interoperability matters. I think everybody keeps saying, oh, I'm going to wait for the market to settle out because I need interoperability. And I'm not sure that interoperability matters. No one's given me an argument to say it's a key buying criteria.
I don't think so. And some of the things that I think are going to allow for interoperability are the things, like Steve mentioned earlier in the call, some of these organizations like Mode that create a virtual backbone for you, and then you could attach each one of these SD-WAN solutions to it. So if, say, you've got an SD-WAN solution that you're not happy with and you want to migrate off of it, that you could potentially take that what would be, a backbone overlay, attach your SD-WAN overlays to it, make it so connectivity can pass between the two SD-WAN networks, and then complete your migration. I think that may be the way we deal with interoperability for the foreseeable future.
I'm curious if you guys see folks actually on purpose using different SD-WAN vendors. Like, maybe I've got a vendor in the North American region that really suits my needs, but in Asia I'm going with vendor B because of other business reasons. Is that happening?
Actually, I've seen companies. I have one client who 800 sites globally. They rolled out 200 sites with a solution I won't name, and then they discovered that it isn't as scalable as they thought, and they had to open up a whole new process and figure out which direction they're going. But it was a very well-known name in the industry.
I would say what Greg said earlier, I think, is more often the case, that you have folks who, through M&A or whatever, end up with multiple vendors. But I have talked to a couple of WAN managers who were in the boat of saying, yeah, I prefer this SD-WAN solution in this region and this one over here. Even down to sort of, one wasn't actually regional who kind of mentioned this, but was down to what the feature set they needed at different office types. Like, we have a lot of customers who are doing it more that way now, thinking about what goes on at this site and what's the best solution for what's going on at that site. I think it's really rare, though, in terms of all the conversations I've had.
Yeah, I've seen some situations where it's a data gravity issue. So the data lives in a certain region, and locally in that region, they can use one vendor that they might like that works well in that region. And then outside that region, use something that adds maybe WAN optimization in, for overcoming that long distance across the globe.
So you're making my point, which is you don't need them to be interoperable because you can just have many SD-WANs if you wanted. Like, rather than having, you're not, because, and I think the trick here is to, MPLS is in the network. So every router in the path, every forwarding device in the path has to speak MPLS in the data plane, but also in the control plane. So they all have to speak the same MPLS routing engine of, BGP, EVPN, or whatever it is, right? Whereas in SD-WAN, it's just like two boxes at the end of the network form a tunnel. Boom. So you don't have the dependencies. This is why I think overlay networking is a real transition, and SD-WAN might be a multi-sided market. One question that we've seen come up a lot recently is, I've seen a bunch of telcos make a big FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt sell around DDoS. If your SD-WAN appliances are connected to the internet, are they vulnerable to DDoS? I think mostly that this is bunk, and it's just a way to frighten people into paying for something that they don't really want. But I'm wondering what you think. Why don't you start, Steve?
I think it's fear-mongering. The fact that, in good design, you should have at least one internet circuit. If there were a DDoS attack, it would be against, a certain IP or IP range, and you'd have a diverse circuit to prevent that issue. I've heard that story. It's a possible risk. I don't look at it as a realistic risk.
Maybe at the head end, but...
Yeah, possibly at the head ends, but in a lot of these solutions where they have a gateway of some sort, a cloud gateway that they aggregate back to, there's usually multiple in the data path. So if one, if one is having difficulty, they can take that one out of service and swing you to an alternate one. But I have to say, I haven't seen it myself, any issues as far as DDoS when it comes to an SD-WAN. I don't know how you'd pull something like that off. I'm not saying it's not feasible, but I've never seen it.
Yeah.
In keeping with what Jason was saying, from the head end perspective, there are many carriers that, offer SD-WAN remediation as, or prevention as part of their service. And some of them offer it at no charge.
Well, that's about all. That's because it's not worth anything.
Yeah. Well,
I think
you get what you pay for, right?
Yeah. I just think it's highly unlikely that you'll be DDoSed to the point of, but you pay a lot of money to have that capacity reserved for you. And at the end of the day, if it does become a problem, you can always act a penalty fee for activating DDoS service after the fact and not paying a reservation fee effectively. But it's probably better to do that. Like, you can activate a DDoS with various providers with a credit card. So why would you bother? Just have a runbook ready to go and know where you're going to go, I think.
Agree with that.
So final topic, if you had to make a decision to go ahead, any tips on deployment strategies? What would you do to get started? What would you be, you know, just say, you know, the first, say, 3 or 4 points that you'd be telling customers, your customers, about a deployment strategy? Why don't we start with Steve?
Well, the one thing I tell all my clients at the start of an engagement is to plan long ahead for implementation of circuits. I said that earlier, but if you have a contract, an MPLS contract that you want to migrate away from, you know, there are some MPLS vendors that, you know, will not give you month to month at the end of the contract. And you don't want to be in a position where you're forced to renew, you know, out of, you know, a gun held to your head. Develop a good listing of use cases of your network, what's important for your network, to help you determine, you know, what is going to be the best feature set from an SD-WAN provider to satisfy those requirements. And those use cases will also be used for your POC, because these are all things you want to test.
Yeah,
I agree with Steve. Line up, you know, the use cases. POC is important. I highly recommend, this is one of those things that you can actually kick the tires on before you deploy. You know, unlike an MPLS network, no one's going to provision you, you know, a loop for you to just play around with. But with an SD-WAN service, you can deploy a couple of boxes at a few locations, check out the operation of it, make sure you like how it works, and pay for it, right?
What's that? Don't be cheap and demand to get it for free.
I don't give those POCs away for free. Yeah, you're definitely going to pay for it.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm saying to the people listening, you know, if you're going to buy three sites, you don't need to spend $250,000 to get started. You can buy a couple of smallish boxes for, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 a site and have a play. Don't be cheap and nasty and say, give me free boxes to evaluate. Buy three small boxes to do a three site test and run with that, I think, is what you're saying.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And we actually have, you know, we have a proof of concept program where, you know, we charge the customer for our assistance, but we help you stand it up and we go through a test plan with you. So we establish, you know, the features and functionality you'd like to see from the SD-WAN service. And we just run through that with you to you know, turn on the features, let you test them and make sure you're comfortable with it. But
maybe ask the provider to give you some free cloud software or something, but you don't have to.
Absolutely. So I think those things are important, and, you know, carefully identify what you want to get out of an SD-WAN service. If it's just cost savings, you know, I would temper people's expectations there. It's not always you're going to save you money. So, you know, you have to think really carefully about that. But, you know, as far as increasing performance and making the network operate better on the whole, I think that most SD-WAN solutions out there, at least the ones that are recognized as such, I think all of those, especially in the Gartner Magic Quadrant, you know, I expect success with those, but try them out. Make sure that they're going to work in your environment.
You know, one of the things we didn't talk about, and it's a whole other subject, is movement to the cloud, Office 365, needing more bandwidth. So you see companies that had a 10 meg MPLS and circuit, and now they're doing 100 or 200 megs of internet connectivity because they're moving to the cloud. So you have to take that into account.
More is just more.
You guys keyed that up perfectly for me, because Greg, my answer to this question really is you should do a benchmark, right? You have to understand where you're starting. The vendors, like Jason mentioned, that, you know, kind of have told this story about cutting your costs in half and stuff like that. And we don't, that's possible. And I have seen folks who have gone from maybe an all MPLS solution to all internet and saved a bunch of money. But one, in a certain sense, like, why do you necessarily, you know, unless you're in a position where the company's in trouble and you really got to cut the budget, why do you necessarily want to cut the budget? You want to do what Steve just said. and understand how you can get a much more robust network without jacking your costs way up. I think that's what most of our customers and most of our WAN Summit attendees and everybody I talk to are thinking about, is not how can I cut my budget way, way down from where it is, but how can I get a lot more bandwidth for the same budget or you know, maybe even a slight decrease.
I think for my money, I think one of the more important things is to actually have some competence in-house. So one of the things that a lot of people underestimate is how hard it can be to get this to work if you've never done something like this before. So if you're thinking of routing and now you're in SD-WAN, you have to change a lot of the things that you don't know. And I'd like to suggest that you need to be fairly careful about getting that right, in the sense that you need to know what you're buying and why you're buying it. So you may need to retrain, and your manager may need to give you some ability to run so that you can make mistakes and work it out. So starting small is to get that training, because there's not a whole lot of training out there, I think, elsewhere. Well, thanks so much for listening today. I think we sort of covered, well, fairly detailed, but a reasonably good smattering going on the task of analyzing where SDN is and maybe giving you some advice on the business side, not so much the technology side, but on the business side, and giving you some feedback on what people are doing with SD-WAN from people who've actually been doing it. Thanks so much to our people for joining us today. Let's go around the table one more time and say and get them to tell you where they're from. Greg, where are you from? Where can people find you?
Yep, Greg Bryan, Telegeography. You can find me at any of our WAN Summit events. I occasionally blog at blog.telegeography.com, though I'm hoping to do more of that. And I loathe Twitter, so you won't see me there, but one of my colleagues has a at WAN Summit Twitter handle, so if you want to keep up with the WAN Summit there, we'd love to talk to you.
Steve Garson.
You can read my blogs at sd-wan-experts.com/blog and on Twitter at WANExperts.
And Jason?
You can find more about WAN Dynamics at WANdynamics.com and on Twitter at WAN Dynamics. And I also, I'm a little more active on Twitter at Jay Gintert on the Twitters.
Thank you so much to you guys for taking time out of your busy days and giving it to us. And thanks very much to you, the audience, for listening to us. You can find a bunch of show notes for this episode in your podcatcher, but also on the packetpushers.net website that goes along with this post. And you can also discover thousands of other podcast episodes right across our podcast network around networking and being infrastructure professionals, along with our own blog and news feeds. You can follow us on the Twitter as at Packet Pushers. We're on LinkedIn. You can follow the Packet Pushers company page where we update the latest stuff. You can rate us on Apple Podcasts. And in fact, if you could, it would be so helpful if you would get out there and tell more people about us, give us ratings on your favorite app, or share the data on LinkedIn, or, you know, if you want to share it on Facebook as well, and that's fine. That would be so helpful to us in helping us to build an audience and keep this business going forward, because last and never least, too much networking would never be enough.